The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420. The Answer.
Hour number two underway now at 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420. The Answer. It's Tuesday, 28th morning of the 12th month of the year of our Lord, 2021. If you missed the interview with Josh Mandel that we just finished, it was a very important one, I believe, particularly in the battle against indoctrination. He's got guts. I don't know how the Senate primary is going to turn out. But Josh Mandel has got guts. He's out there saying things that he knows are going to make him a magnet for criticism, and he doesn't care. He's saying what he believes to be his right. And by the way, he is right. So if you missed that interview, go to WHKRadio.com, and you can listen to it on our podcast page. Joining me now to start hour number two for the first time post-Christmas is our good friend Peter Kersenow. Peter is a Cleveland attorney. He's a best-selling author. He's a columnist. He's a sometimes law professor. He's the host of the Kersenow Report, and he happens to be the longest-serving member of the United States Commission on Civil Rights. Peter, good morning, my friend.
Bob, Merry Christmas and upcoming Happy New Year.
And thank you very much, and the same to you, Pete. I appreciate it. Pete, we're going to start with Joe Biden tapping out. For those who don't know, I did this in the open. I did this in the open. For those who are not MMA fluent and don't know what it means to hear the or to see a fighter tapping the back of his opponent or tapping his leg or tapping the mat, saying, I am in so much pain. I am dying here. I cannot win this. I give up. I surrender. Joe Biden just surrendered to COVID-19. This after Joe Biden spent an entire summer of 2020 campaigning on the notion that, quote, Trump still doesn't have a plan to deal with COVID. I do. Now, that's a direct quote from Joe Biden and his campaign on Twitter during the campaign. There are many others like it, including this one from Senator Kamala Harris, who tweeted during that campaign, the first thing at Joe Biden on and I will do in the White House is get this virus under control. This was their entire mantra. They have now had a year to do it, a year with three different quote-unquote vaccines made available to them by their predecessor through Operation Warp Speed. And a year into their presidency, after all of their boasting, after all of their promises, we have a plan to get rid of coronavirus, of COVID-19. This is what Joe Biden said this weekend.
There is no federal solution. This gets solved at a state level. I'm looking at Governor Sununu on the board here. He talks about that a lot. And it ultimately gets down to where the rubber meets the road. And that's where the...
Where does the rubber meet the road, Joe? Where does it meet the road?
There is no federal solution. This gets solved at a state level.
I want to know, Peter Kersenow, why we didn't hear that from Joe Biden, the candidate, last summer, when he was running for president, why didn't he say, you know, don't have your expectations up too high here. There is no federal solution for COVID-19. He promised us there was, and he knew what it was. This is a tap out in the first round of the game.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's important. I think you've really hit on something pretty significant here, and I think it really bears, I mean, your entire listening audience is clearly aware of this, understands the hypocrisy of this, but I think this is something very, very large, because what we have here is a guy who won the presidency with the assistance, boy, is that an understatement, of a lying and cheating media. And that's not an overstatement. That may be an understatement. And I hesitate to use words like that, but it's true. He did so solely, he didn't have an economic plan. He didn't have a foreign policy that he articulated to the American people. He didn't address any discrete issues, including immigration, crime, none of those things. They were all blank slates because he was hiding in his basement with the assistance of the media, who never pressed him on any salient points. But the one thing he did talk about constantly when he did crawl out from the basement, when he was on the public platform or in a debate, was COVID. They knew that was the one potential vulnerability for Donald Trump, because everything else Trump did worked out spectacularly well, despite the misrepresentations and flat-out lies of the media. So they went after COVID, something over which no one really had any control whatsoever, except for the Chinese. And he made this promise, and he said, Donald Trump doesn't have a plan. I have a plan to shut it down. And the media went along with it without asking him. Think about this. Tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands eventually died from this or were dying of this. We shut down the economy as a result. He says he has a plan to shut down the virus. Big deal. And the media asks not one question about what his plan is, how he's going to do it. You talk about the fact that the media repeatedly talked about Trump allegedly lying. Trump was like a car salesman who engages in puffery. Everyone knew what he meant. He wasn't lying. He was puffing, if anything. But this is a giant lie in order to get elected, and it resulted in a policy debacle of monumental proportions. All you have to do is walk past any television, listen to any radio station, and it's COVID 24/7, especially the Omicron variant. Now, you know, Bob, you and I have our own views on, you know, Omicron. I happen to think that, you know, it again, all due respect to those who've gone through it, and clearly, it's, you know, coronavirus is a serious disease, and thousands have died from it, no doubt about that. But we're Americans. We don't shut down our country because of a disease. But nonetheless, here we are.
Well, let's Pete, if I may, I mean, I don't want that to leave that hanging out there the way you just did. You know, you talked about Omicron, and then you said thousands of people have died of COVID, not of Omicron.
Omicron
is killing no one. Omicron is dealt with not by hospitalization, but by NyQuil. That's what Omicron is. And I want everybody to understand that very clearly. Omicron is a cold. And if you look at the CDC's website at the symptoms of Omicron and compare it to the symptoms of a common cold on WebMD or anywhere else, you're going to find it's identical. Anybody getting Omicron and thinking about canceling New Year's Eve plans, or if they canceled their Christmas plans out of fear of Omicron or anything of that nature, if they're not going to fly, if they're not going to dine out, it's a, and moreover, any government entities at the local or state or national level that are going to change policies based on the common cold, for God's sake, Pete, I mean, it's over. We have crossed a Rubicon, if that's how
I couldn't agree with you more. That it's just so dispiriting to look at my country and see so many of my countrymen cowering in fear. Now, and especially as you indicated with Omicron, which is nothing more than a bad, not even a bad cold. It's a cold. They've got maybe one person in the United States has been documented to possibly have died from this. But most people are skeptical, or at least skeptical people are skeptical. Those who are duly skeptical, given all the bull crap we've gotten on this stuff.
Right.
And we shut down a country over this? This is a country, I mean, you know, I hate to draw these analogies because they're so shop-worn, but what about the guys who stormed, you know, Omaha Beach? Do you think that they would be, this is just, it's ludicrous. This is, it gives me pause as to how we can move forward as a country, you know, the land of the free and the home of the brave. My goodness. But the point with respect to Brandon with respect to Biden is that he ran solely on shutting down COVID, and now he capitulates and says, admits what I think most of us knew, except for those who voted for him. And even those who voted for him, I think, just wanted to get rid. Nobody voted for Biden. I mean, 99% of the vote was an anti-Trump vote.
Right.
But nonetheless, this is what he, and it was the lie of at least the year. Bottom line, it was the lie of the year. The media doesn't call him on it. They call Trump on a tweet that where he may get a decimal point off on something. But with Biden, they let him go. They are continuing to try to prop him up, which is an impossibility. You can't prop this guy up. He has failed on multiple fronts. A year ago, the United States was in better shape in so many measures, in virtually every measure, than we are today. That's why I say, Bob, he didn't just tap out a couple days ago. He tapped out on January 21st, maybe even on January 20th. Everything over which he may have some control has gotten demonstrably worse. And when you think about COVID, what has he done other than distribute the vaccines that were created at warp speed under the Trump administration? Other than issue these godforsaken mandates that everybody hates? He's done nothing. He has no plan, has never had a plan. He's clueless about COVID. I don't know who's making a policy in the administration, but it begs, I mean, many of us have been skeptical. We always thought that it was a small coterie of people around him. I know a couple of the people who were around him. They have since moved to other positions. Far left, hard left radicals. But I do think, based on a number of observations that you and I have shared, and your listeners probably are aware of, that he's not making the crucial decisions. And what's so, I think, manifestly plain is when you look at what happened over the weekend, I'm sure you probably talked about this already, Bob, knowing
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I did, and I'm going to talk about it with you too, Pete, but you know what? Let's save that for the next segment here. In fact, we'll take our break here now at 10:18 so we can give that a full segment, because I want to play not only what happened, but also the explanation of the Oregon dad who called him and said it to him face-to-face, or at least voice-to-voice while he was on national television, or maybe it was regional television. I do want to get your thoughts on that, and I want to talk about what it means to the mainstream media, too. So, Pete, stick around for that. We'll come right back with Kirsten now on AM 1420 The Answer. Okay, 10:20. We continue on this Tuesday edition of The Authority with Peter Kirsten now. Okay, Pete, you obviously heard the same thing that most of America heard, which is just a remarkable, remarkable display of this man's cognitive decline. The idea that he has no idea what Let's Go Brandon means, that's pretty hard to believe, considering it has been several months now that it has become the viral talking point about among anti-Biden people or pro-America people. That's not plausible that he didn't know. The chances are he simply just forgot, because he's Joe Biden and he's cognitively declining, and he probably forgot, which is why he did this on national television.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a wonderful Christmas as well. Merry Christmas, and let's go Brandon.
Let's go Brandon. I agree.
Let's go Brandon. I agree. He just said blank Joe Biden. I agree. Pete, the caller has been just being attacked, and I mean dragged, as being an unpatriotic, anti-American, subversive, you know what, for daring to say such a horrific thing to Joe Biden. This was his response on Steve Bannon's podcast.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Let's Go Brandon is, and I've said it in other articles, I am a Christian man. It's for me, it's God first and foremost. I don't follow any one man blindly. Some of the media has run with that and said I don't support Donald Trump. That's absolutely false. Donald Trump is my president, and he should still be president right now. The election was 100% stolen. So I just want to make that clear. Let's Go Brandon is more than just F Joe Biden. Let's Go Brandon encompasses the entirety of our frustration with Joe Biden, the administration, the leftist mob, the cancel culture, the mainstream media. They're the ones who made this a thing. And we're able, as conservatives, we're able to find humor in this. But there's terrible things going on. We've got the debacle in Afghanistan. I mean, they're not even talking about that anymore. It's crazy to me how quickly they forgot that story, and no one's talking about it. And there's still people trapped over there. We've got the supply chain issues. We've got the inflation rates. We've got terrible policies on abortion. I'm a very pro-life person, absolutely terrible policies on abortion. And the border crisis, the federal mandates regarding vaccines. I mean, it just there's more than I could even say.
So this guy is clearly not just some radical, Peter Kirshenow, but he got through on the NORAD Santa line talking to the president and the first lady. He dropped that bomb there at the end, and Joe Biden, either just trying to play it off or kind of forgetting what that actually meant, said, yeah, I agree. Your thoughts?
A couple of things. Number one, I want to compliment that guy. What a great distillation of being an American. An understanding what it means and what's going on right now and the challenges that we face. Number two, I would gently chastise him as a conservative. And that is, Let's Go Brandon, of course, is not profanity, it's not obscene. But nonetheless, in a public forum, I do think that as conservatives, and I know the liberals never give us this stuff and we should fight back and punch back twice as hard, but nonetheless, I would act with a little bit more decorum toward the president for this reason, and this reason only. He called in, this was for his son, basically for his kid, and the president's doing a nice thing to kind of entertain them in this fashion, as presidents do. Maybe a different form than one where you're calling in with NORAD, it's Christmas time, on behalf of your son. You know, the president was nice to your son, so, but that's a minor thing. The overarching thing is he's 100% correct, and despite the fact that I've got that little quibble, I'm really happy he did it, because it reveals several things. Number one is, Bob, I'm not sure, I'm still somewhat vacillating between whether or not Biden was completely clueless, which is extremely plausible, or whether or not he's been shielded by his staff from this. And the reason I say that, as bizarre and implausible as that sounds, is it's clear Jill understood what happened. But he went ahead and said, you know, hearing this, he went ahead very forthrightly and said, I agree. I don't think he's that debilitated that he wouldn't know what was just said to him unless his handlers have been shielding him from it. He's expressed and exhibited cluelessness on a host of issues that ordinary Americans are aware of, let alone the President of the United States, who gets daily presidential briefings, should know much more about the state of the country, the state of the economy, foreign affairs, than we do. But he repeatedly seems to be out to lunch. Now, part of that is cognitive decline, no doubt about that. But I do think Let's Go Brandon is a meme that's been out there for about, what, 3 months or so, almost 4 months?
I would say about four months.
It's been repeated millions of times. It's ubiquitous. I see it on gas station pumps, on grocery store shelves,
everywhere. He heard it in Kentucky. When he went down there to survey tornado damage, he was greeted with "Let's go, Brandon."
Yes.
So, you know, he can't be shielded by his staff. He has to hear it. He has to know it. He watches MSNBC. He watches CNN, where they routinely decry people using that phrase as being disrespectful. He knows what it is, and yet he said, "I agree anyway." It has to be that he just is so out of it, so mentally not there all the time. I mean, you saw Jill Biden's eyes roll and that look on her face. She heard it immediately and knew exactly what was just done. And especially to hear him say, I agree, that he's just not there, at least not all the time anyway.
Both explanations are plausible. I don't disagree with you. I'm saying I think, you know, it's very, very plausible. I do think, though, that when you go, what happens with all presidents, No matter the circumstances, regardless of the public forum, whether it's a meeting at the G7 summit, whether it's interacting with supporters or something like this NORAD event, you get briefed by it. You get prepped by your staff. Presidents can never be allowed to look bad. From a political standpoint, from a foreign policy standpoint, from a domestic policy standpoint, they can't be allowed to look bad. They get briefed even on something as minor and inconsequential as the NORAD event. And they would say little things like, remember this, that, and the other thing. Remember, there may be some crank who calls in. And they prep for stuff like that. For him not to be prepared for that says that either his staff fell down on the job or they've been insulating him from it. And I do think they've been insulating him from things. They don't permit him to take questions. Remember the stories about how when they got criticism for shepherding out the media whenever there were tough questions being asked.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Instead, now they turn up the music like, you know, the show's over, guys. You know, the latest episode of Biden Taps Out is over with, okay? Roll the credits.
Yeah. So they turn hustle the him off of the stage. But
exactly
here,
right.
There's one other element to this I want to get to before the break here at the bottom of the hour, and that is the media's response to this. This is Nicole Wallace on MSNBC, so visibly and audibly frustrated and disgusted with the phrase, let's go Brandon. This is what she says it means.
I don't know where to start. Let me tell you why this matters. The asymmetry has always been what advantages the Trump right more than anything else. And the asymmetry of saying F you to a sitting president on a call in front of your four kids. Don't look past this. Don't look at this as a story about giving airtime to a MAGA guy who goes on Steve Bannon's podcast and said, I wasn't joking. Not only did I say, F you, Mr. President, I said more than that. This is the slow motion insurrection, Jason, in full color.
Now, if you say, let's go, Brandon, it's a slow motion insurrection in full color, Pete. Now, I didn't hear Nicole Wallace or anybody else on the left defending Donald Trump or condemning Robert De Niro, who stood on national TV in front of thousands of people in a full theater, saying F Trump not once but twice and getting standing ovations for doing so. Was that insurrectionist? I guess I have to ask, because apparently this is, but that wasn't. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, among other things, Nicole Wallace is a dumb bulb who doesn't recognize that almost everyone's going to understand that she has a glaring double standard when it comes to these things. All you have to do is go back and, you know, I don't watch her show, but I've seen clips of various, because she repeatedly says inane things. So over the last couple of years, if you're watching Fox or listening to any kind of radio program, you hear her saying just inane and false things. But the first thing she did is set things up with a lie, a flat-out lie. She says that he said F you to Joe Biden, and he did not say that. Now, as you pointed out, many left-wing celebrities, and I repeat myself, used that word explicitly and were cheered by the likes of Nicole Wallace. Here, this guy used a euphemism for that. He conveyed his message, but as he very clearly articulated, he should have a show instead of Nicole Wallace. He said, look, what this is about is more than a rebuke to Joe Biden. And you and I have discussed this. What was so beautiful about this, it was also a rebuke to the media and the cancel culture. The media that's been lying, not just with respect to Joe Biden, but with respect to everything pertaining to leftism and Trump and everything else. And it was like, because we heard that reporter so quickly at the Talladega Speedway come up with, let's go Brandon. It's almost second nature, whether or not she meant to cover it up or anything else. The mainstream media is so, with such alacrity, knows which way they need to go to paper things over, smooth things over, so the left doesn't look bad. And this is precisely what this guy was going after, and I applaud him for it. He said it in a way that wasn't obscene or profane, but conveyed the message, and he did so in a way, and I don't mean to wax patriotic or anything about this, but he did so in a way that I think the founding fathers would have approved of. That is, he did it with some measure of decorum, but he did it directly to the commander-in-chief of the United States, because you know what? That's what America's about. You don't get, as commander-in-chief, to mandate stuff to us. But we get to tell you how we feel about you. That's the beauty of America. That's the essence of America.
The beauty of the First Amendment, for goodness sake, says we can say to our government, blank you, if we want to. And he did it in a much more genteel way than that. All right, 10:32, we'll get news. We'll come back. Peter, one of your foils, Hannah Nicole Jones, is at it again. I'll get your response to that coming up right here on AM 1420.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a wonderful Christmas as well.
Merry
Christmas, and let's go Brandon.
Let's go Brandon, I agree.
Just because the president is incoherent doesn't mean you have to be. The Bob France Authority, keeping you politically coherent. On AM 1420, The Answer.
Let's go, Brandon. It's 10:38. Thanks for joining us on AM 1420, The Answer. Peter Kersenow continues with us for one more segment on this last appearance of his of 2021. All right, Pete, you were on the President's 1776 Commission to essentially identify and defend American history as American history, the founding of this country in 1776, and this was largely in response to the New York Times 1619 Project, written largely by Nicole Hannah Jones. This, of course, was the proposition that the United States was actually began and founded in 1619 when the first African slaves hit the colonies. So, Peter, you have a little bit of a history here. You have written about her. You have written about the 16 Project in depth. And again, being on the commission, 1776 Commission, you're very fluent with it. What is your reaction to her latest statement? This writer of the 1619 Project,
yeah,
which she is pushing to be in schools and taught as American history, said on Meet the Press yesterday, quote, "I'm not a professional educator. I don't have a degree in social studies or science. We send our children to school because we want them to be taught by people who have an expertise in the subject area. That is not my job." She Right. was arguing, essentially, that parents shouldn't have a say in what is taught in schools. She said she isn't qualified to make that determination, yet she promotes the 1619 Project Right. as required school curricula.
Right.
Go ahead and, I'll give you free rein to go ahead and take all of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was an election in Virginia that centered around whether or not parents should have any kind of input into what their kids learn. And she's maintaining that parents shouldn't have. I mean, that is essentially Soviet, that we are just giving over our kids to the state to be instructed in the manner in which the state deems fit. And if you take a look at this state, I shudder to think that our kids are being taught, and they have been, unfortunately, to a large extent. Many parents have ceded the education of their kids over to people like Nicole Hannah Jones and her ilk. And we've seen over the last 30 to 40 years the consequences of doing so. A kind of emaciated patriotism in America today, a blame America first perspective on behalf of so many kids, and it's not just kids now. These people are now going into industry, captains of industry. They're in the military. By the way, as an aside, I see that for the first time now, the military has suffered a significant decline in the esteem in which it's held. Remember, for so long, when they took polls about, you know, how people think about different institutions in America, whether it be business, education, the media, politicians, the military was always at the top, along with the churches. But it's declined by like 30 to 40 points just in the last few years for a variety of reasons that I think your listeners can easily identify. But it's the consequences, I believe, of the kind of education that a Nicole Hannah Jones is perfectly willing to inflict upon the rest of America. Yet she, as you just indicated, she concedes she has no clue about these things. She's not a historian, which is abundantly plain when you read the 1619 Project in its manifold, just not falsehoods, mistakes. But she says, well, parents shouldn't really be involved in the education of their kids. Same thing that Terry McAuliffe said in the gubernatorial election against Glenn Youngkin, and he got shellacked as a result of that. The left has been saying this for quite some time, going all the way back to John Dewey 100 years ago, saying that the state, he didn't say it quite dramatically like this, but the state should dictate what our kids learn. And America is not about the state. America is about the individual and the right of self-determination of individuals and families. And the result of having the state educate is Soviet. It is communist China. It is Nazi Germany. The state shouldn't be the prime. The state incorporates what parents and the community say should be taught. But to say that parents should have no say over their kids' education, and especially when a non-educator, I mean, she destroyed her own argument. A non-educator takes a horrible historical framework like the 1619 Project, foists it on, and actually it wasn't foisted, the educational establishment willingly took on this anti-American project, riddled with falsehoods, and even though she confesses she's not an educator, boy, is that an understatement, and not a historian, even greater understatement, she now says parents should have no say over whether or not her ridiculous, error-filled project is taught to kids. It's an abomination. But this is what we're being seen. I think I've mentioned to you that my college football team stays in almost daily communication. It's pretty pathetic. You know, we're talking about decades and decades of staying in communication with one another. Great guys spread all over the country. And one of the things that binds us is we have a kind of common sentiment or sensibility about things related to education and, of course, you know, our alma mater. But almost all of us have had kids and now grandkids. And some of them have gone to our alma mater. And we're, frankly, horrified by what we're seeing in terms of education today. We cannot exist as the United States of America, land of the free and home of the brave, if we continue with this charade of an education. Think, by the way, and I'm going a little bit off topic, but it's similar in many respects. The anti-Americanism goes deeper than a 1619 project. It goes deeper than, and it shows you the consequences of trying to purge parents from the education of their kids. In California, they're eliminating D's and F's as grades. I mean, you've heard this before, and I think we may have talked about it, but they're eliminating it completely. Rather than elevate mainly minority kids so they can compete, instruct them in a way so they can compete in society and be successful individuals, they simply have thrown up their hands and said, look, we've been trying for 40 years to get black and brown kids to get A's, B's, and C's, but we can't do it, so we're just going to eliminate D's and F's. Oh, yeah, that's going to turn out well. But as you and I have talked about several times, they've been effectively doing that anyway. Remember that Baltimore school district, or the Baltimore school district, where the average GPA was 1.0. The average GPA. Remember that guy? I don't remember the exact number, Bob, but I think it was this summer. You and I talked about the fact, it came to my attention in the Civil Rights Commission, that this is what happens when parents are not involved in the education of their kids. Apparently, the kid who was the valedictorian, who had, I believe it was a D-plus average, strike that, he wasn't the valedictorian, but he was one of the top students. He had a D-plus
average. I remember it, yeah.
Yeah. And his mother found out about it and was outraged. Like, how could this happen? Well, this is what happens when parents aren't involved in the education of their systems. What happens, or their children, what happens is the school system will issue mandates. The school system will say, we're not going to educate in person, we're going to do it remotely. The school system will inculcate their kids in critical race theory or in comprehensive sex education, as we've seen over and over again when parents through Zoom or otherwise see what's going on with respect to the curriculum. In many regards, they're aghast. Not only are kids not being taught the basics, but they're being taught toxic ideologies and ideas harmful not just to society, but to the individual kids themselves. So we see a growing incidence of mental health issues among kids, and I would argue it's not simply because of lockdowns and, you know, mask mandates, but because this pipeline of toxicity is going directly into their brains and souls, coming from people who are not their parents. And in some regards, I don't want to paint a broad brush of teachers. I mean, heck, I know a lot of teachers. We all have had teachers that were excellent. But for parents out there of a certain age, and I've been there, I've been in the schools today and the teachers today on balance are not the same teachers we had when we were growing up. You know, they're not the kindly Mrs. Joneses, you know, from like, you know, or Mrs. I can't remember her name from A Christmas Story that we all watch around this time of year. I mean, there are hard left ideologues here who've been pumped out by education schools who are engaged in outright indoctrination. That is not an overstatement at all. And I think many of your listeners realize that, and that's why when we go around, when I go around, I talk to many of your listeners throughout Northeast Ohio, one of the primary topics they're concerned about is what they're hearing from their schools, and God bless them, they're engaged. And they go in there, and they take all the brickbats, and they nonetheless want to hold up America and America values against the onslaught from the left. But anyway, that's a long response, Bob, to say Nicole Hannah-Jones, as usual, beclowns herself. Every time she appears in public, she does so, and we must completely dismiss the 1619 Project, insist it's not taught in school. It's not only factually wrong, but it corrupts not just education, the process of education, but our view of the greatest country in the history of the world and sets one kid against the other solely on the basis of race.
Yeah, and you know, Pete, the frustrating thing about it, despite everything that you just said, and despite the criticism on both sides of the aisle, even from people who like her, even from people who like the message, they have admitted that from a historical standpoint, you know, the 1619 Project, as written, is essentially a work of creative fiction. It is not real. It is not reality. It has no business being taught. And yet, Pete, the frustrating thing is it is. Even though there are a lot of people, as you pointed out, in Virginia and across the country who recognize this, despite that universal criticism of it, it is still being used in countless numbers of schools. I don't know how to counter that. You know, not every parent is going to, you know, and moreover, not every kid who sits through 1619 Project, quote unquote, lessons and lesson plans are going to go back later on and listen to Peter Kersenow or read the 1776 Commission's report or any of these kind of things and undo the damage. The damage is going to be done. That's what they're going to believe going forward. That's what they're going to share with others. That's what they're going to share with their own kids. So even while we push back against this and more, like you say, of my listeners get it and are listening to it and about it, you know, that's not all of us. And there's going to be a lot of people who are very damaged by this.
Right. That's the danger, Bob. We are, we've been talking about this. We're at an inflection point and have been for several years at this country. This is not as it used to be in the past where we thought that, you know, a little bit of pushback and we'd return to the United States of America. The left has been on the march for decades now. They're on the ascendancy. They control all the major institutions, media, major corporations, government. But what's important for us is to continue to act like the individual who said, let's go, Brandon, to the President of the United States. Again, wish he wouldn't have done that when his kid is around. But nonetheless, I think it's appropriate. It's essential to do that. That's, you know, they always talk about patriotism on the left. That's patriotic to such as the highest form of patriotism until Democrats get in office, okay? But that's important, I think, when you just do it a little bit. Now, a year and a half ago, we had, you know, Resolution 20 was passed by the State Board of Education here in Ohio that would have inculcated the 1619 Project and critical race theory into our curriculum here in Ohio. And just a couple of people were aware of it, you know, sounded the alarm bell, and that galvanized several people. Not a whole lot of people, but several people. But as soon as it galvanized those people, it spread like wildfire, and Resolution 20 was rescinded. Now, we always have to be vigilant because the left never, ever stops. They never sleep. They're going to try to insinuate themselves into the curriculum nonetheless. But we have to keep doing that. We saw what happened in Virginia with Youngkin. We see that happening in other jurisdictions where parents find out about what's going on. They've been alarmed by it, and they're making their voices heard. I think that one of the biggest mistakes the left has made is triggering parents, whether it's with critical race theory or with transgenderism. We see with the University of Pennsylvania swimmer. I think when parents see the damage that's being done to their kids in furtherance of a particular ideology, they're our best bulwark. I am concerned. I am alarmed by the direction which the country is going. We've been talking about ever since I've been on your show, Bob, and I think we're going on 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah.
I've been talking about we're at an inflection point. We're either beyond it or we're just on the cusp of it. And I don't know where it is right now, but we're teetering on it. And it could go bad, and we may never be able to reclaim the America that we once knew. But nonetheless, I still have hope in the advent of the new year that because of parents and other good Americans, like the guy who said, let's go, Brandon, these people get it. They're alarmed by what they see. I think there are certain markers that occurred. I think one of the best things about the Biden administration is it puts into such bold and vivid relief the manifold failures of leftism on a variety of fronts. And I think it's alerted and alarmed people, and they're pushing back. That's what we must do. The media is in completely in the pocket of the left. And, I mean, they are the left. They're not in the pocket of the left. And so it's difficult sometimes for the truth to filter out. But when it comes to parents and seeing what's happening to their kids, they know what's going on. And it kind of spreads. I think parents are looking around saying, what else are they doing? What kind of other crazy things are they doing, not just to me and my family, but to society at large? So I still have hope. I think we're at a more dangerous point than we've ever been in our entire lives, to a large extent fueled by critical race theory, which I use as an umbrella term for anti-Americanism in general, and which seems to be pervasive on the left, which means they control all the institutions. When you hear them talking about systemic racism, they control all the systems, and they truly are racist. Everything they do seems to have a racial identity component to it. Nonetheless, I have hope. I think we're going to prevail, Bob. We have to continue to work hard. We have to continue to say, let's go, Brandon, at every available opportunity, considering the decorum of the event.
The next time we talk, it will be in the year 2022, Peter Kersenow, which is going to be a pivotal year for the future of this country. I look forward to bringing it in with you and working forward in 2022 with you for the betterment of this great country. Thank you, my friend.
Same here, Bob. Happy New Year.
And the same to you, Pete. 10:54, we'll wrap it up after this. Okay, 10:57 as we wrap it up on this Tuesday. Thanks again to Josh Mandel and to Peter Kersenow. Terrific stuff there. If you missed either one of those interviews and conversations, you can catch them on whkradio.com. Strongly urge you to do that. Just go to the podcast page. Look for my name and look for, obviously, today's date, the 28th. TJ has been waiting in Cleveland since early in hour number one. TJ, thanks for holding on, my man. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, Bob. You know, Bob, not only does this potato and cheap not have any federal response to the COVID, he has no federal response to the southern border. I see now where Texas has taken the bull by the horn and building their own wall. The only federal response this guy has, it seems like, is against the parents of school children. That he has a federal response. And one message out to the libtards. This is not Canada. This is not Europe. This is not Australia. We're not filled with sheeples that cave in to the whims of the left with their bullying tactics. This is America, and I think we're finally standing up and saying we've taken enough of this liberal crap, and we're just not going to take it anymore.
Well, you know what, TJ, as usual, you're right on, you know, and they do seem to think that they can do that. The southern border, I saw a statistic just a little bit earlier this morning, and thank you for the call, TJ, that specifically identified the amount of fentanyl that is crossing our southern border every year. And in this past year, it, of course, is at a new record. And there is one person overdosing on fentanyl fatally every 8.5 minutes in this country. That is a direct reflection on the federal response to our poor southern border, which is to say no response. Yes. There is blood on the hands of the President of the United States. We'll talk tomorrow. Thanks to everybody for being a part of the show today. Thanks also to Johnny and Marcy. Let's go, Brandon.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.